Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Kirk Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana. And Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. And don't forget to check out our calendar of events. We'll talk about this in a bit. But next week, Dan Zwicker will be here in the state of Illinois. He's already arrived, in fact. He'll be in Danville and Springfield and Peoria, 7 o'clock at night on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at the Farm Bureau buildings. Find the details, willag.org. Look at the calendar of events, and we'll give you more details as we make our way through this edition of Commodity Week. Now, let's begin the process this afternoon with Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We have another couple of days left of trading in the month of July. However, we're on the cusp of going one way or the other for the monthly charts for corn and soybeans to either close an outside down or outside up month.
Yeah, it's going to be real close as we finish out the month. The technicians are watching that real close as an indicator in through here. We'll see what develops. Monday could be exciting. See how the crop conditions reports come out, particularly the Western Belt. I will miss some of those rains that Illinois received here late this last week.
So we have been watching the weather forecast, Merrill Crowley, really closely because there are places that have been dry. Iowa's crop production or crop progress report last week finally began to drop. I thought about that a little bit during the week this week. Some of that might be dryness. The southeastern portion of Iowa is dry. What we see from USDA says, hey, look at that, or the NOAA numbers says, hey, look at that, we've been dry here. However, we're also almost to the month of August, and we begin to start to hamper what those crop progress reports look like as the crop really just starts to look worse in its natural state.
That's true. We also are looking at a situation with the condition reports that are very variable. What's the person comparing it to? Are they comparing it to last year, what it was maybe a month ago? We talk about the dry weather, and I know it's hurt some places. The thing is we had a pretty good subsoil moisture starting out this year. It didn't matter where you were at. And then it got dry. Now, in places like the Dakotas where they have the extra dry weather and probably southwestern Iowa, I'm sure that's gotten dry enough. It's pulling that reserve out. But any place that had decent weather, didn't get too much rain, that corn was able to root and root down lower and pick up that subsoil. And I don't remember what year it was, but we've had a year similar to that where it's shown those results and come out having a great yield, or at least a good yield.
On Monday during the crop conditions report, in fact, USDA did point to southeastern Iowa, especially if you listen to those crop progress reports on Tuesday afternoon when we talked with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, pointing to 85% of the southeastern part of Iowa short of topsoil moisture. I drove through there. They pollinated. It's gray. That crop's done, at least on parts of 63 and 163 in the southeastern corner of the state. However, there's some really good crops not very far from those areas, so the drought seems pretty isolated. And now we've got farmers and others thinking, hey, when they look out their back window, maybe their crops are better than expected.
Well, you know, if we look at the drought monitor map, Todd, there's 14% of the corn and 15% of the beans that are in drought condition. And so that we have to look at it that way. But that's only 14 and 15%. Now, there's another portion, probably 5 to 8%, that are in the way too wet condition. So that gets us up a little over 20% that has some problems going on. Now, does that mean we've got a real disaster? If you live in those areas, yes. But if you live in the other places, you know, when I look out my back door, things look great.
In fact, they do look great. Again, let's turn to the USDA numbers from the weekly crop conditions report, and I'll try to put these on the website for the Monday afternoon reports. I pulled them from the USDA's website earlier this week, state by state, and those numbers, when you look at them, the crop condition for corn and for soybeans both, don't actually look very good compared to the last 5 years. There are a few of them on average that aren't so bad, but over the last 5 years, there's a lot of red lines that just kind of dive lower.
Yeah, you got to compare it to state to state. Surprisingly, Minnesota keeps hanging in there at the higher end. We'll see how that unfolds here. Iowa, that'll be the key this coming week. But Illinois bean conditions, huge drop, 8%. But with the rains here going into the weekend, maybe that'll stabilize those conditions. The key, though, is as you move eastward here, Indiana as a whole state's been struggling. They can start to improve. Maybe that could help the overall average. But it, as stated before, it's a beauty contest. It varies highly from area to area, so it's still a moving target if you're trying to take conditions and can put a yield on it.
So let's turn our attention to the fundamentals in that case rather than the conditions. And while they're a fundamental, what we really do know about the crop is at this point what the acreage is. USDA gave us those numbers. Pretty much a 50-50 split for corn and soybeans across the United States. That's all new. And then our ending stocks figures remain very, very large.
Well, that's true. You know, when you're coming into a situation like this, you usually need to see some kind of a deterioration in the crop. And I'm talking about the actual production of either 8% or larger. So when you're looking at that, that would bring your bushels per acre, if you want to just look at that per se, not mess with the acres at the time. If you take that off, you're looking at sub 160, sub 45 on the beans. So you've got to get below that to really get this market excited. And I'm just not sure that we're there. One large ag firm was out, I think yesterday or today, with about a 163.6 on the corn, and that's about the lowest I've heard. Most everybody else is running 166 to 168. I know Elwin Taylor hasn't changed. So that's what's going to affect your fundamentals. You've got to get that corn ending stocks below 10% stocks to use. The beans are close, but you need to get it down to it, maybe more like an 8% stocks to use to really get this thing excited, especially with the size of crop we've got down in South America. Last year, our corn market had a lot of usage that we're just not going to see this year because last year, South America had problems with their corn crop and their bean crop. This year, they have a bumper corn crop and bean crop. Now, China's helped us on the bean side of it, but on the corn side of it, I think they're going to be really competitive here in the next month or so.
Speaking of South America, when we look forward to the next year, it appears that their producers may be turning back to more bean acres.
Yeah, Todd, they are, and I think they're looking at things and saying China market's going to be there. We're looking at the idea that they're going to take a little more market there, and they're also thinking they're going to take a little market from the U.S. into Mexico for the next year because of some of the relationships that are going on. I think that one of the things that we're looking at for a possible rally in the beans is the shortness of the beans. We continue to hear people driving all over. All their things is, but they're so small, but they're so small. If they're potted close, it doesn't make a darn bit of difference. But we do have some real problems in different areas because of that. But we've got an awful lot of acres. As we drive around, we're seeing more beans. We know we added 4 to 5 million acres of beans, but it still seems like there's more than that out there. But, you know, a lot of them were planted late in different areas. And could an early frost come along? That's another big wild card.
So we have all these things that are happening in the marketplace. Looking forward, we have the August 10th crop production report. Thanks to the three of you, in fact, Dan Zwicker talked a little bit about this on Thursday afternoon during the closing market report. He'll be here Monday night in Danville at Vermilion County, Illinois, at 7 o'clock at the Farm Bureau building. And he was thinking we may not know for quite some time after the crop production report, and my guess, I'm not sure that he wasn't thinking it won't be till October by the time we really have a good idea what the crop coming out looks like and yield is really from the combines, and that's when they make the acreage adjustments too.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here. The August report, they're just going to count ears and so forth, but you hit it right on the head here. It's going to be actual combine data coming from the producer, probably push the market. We're going to be arguing yield and acres clear into January. There's ideas that the harvested acres on corn could go down 1 million acres. So you take 1 million acres off that, you do the math on it, and there's a lot of moving parts here, because if you take the bad corn, you got to raise the yield back up a little bit. So it's going to be a dynamic market here for the next 2 or 3 months.
And then, Dan, you'll have Dan in Peoria at the Farm Bureau building on Tuesday night, and he'll also be in Springfield, correct, on Wednesday night. All of those are at 7 o'clock. They're all at the Farm Bureau buildings. And again, Monday night is in Danville.
Yeah, the big one be Danville. We'll have Dan there and Michael Clark. He'll be the weather guy. He'll try to get a handle on the weather. But also with Dan and Peoria in Springfield, we'll have Bill Graff speaking too. And he's going to give sort of a farmer's perspective on things, which could be quite interesting with him.
Yeah, Bill Graff grew up next to me, only about 7 miles from my house. So I know the Graff family fairly well. And he's been pretty active, was director of Illinois State Rural Development for a while, and he has a podcast. I suspect many farmers who listen to our podcast have probably checked out his morning chat on the podcast, so you can look up Bill Graff's name and find him there. So that should be a great evening for those, again, who want to do that. It's Danville and Peoria and Springfield, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all at 7 o'clock. All at the Farm Bureau buildings in those respective counties. So check those out if you get the opportunity. So now let's come back to what farmers can, maybe should think or do. We've got a long time before the harvest, and it appears there's an awful lot of the fundamentals yet to be put in place, and we really won't know for quite some time. So do they stay put? Do you have an option for them that they might be able to put in place today?
Well, one particular information piece that I got here, that it once you get the August report, and a lot of people don't give it much credence because of the population, and I've kind of wondered myself why they even brought it back. Rich Feltus from R.G. O'Brien did some research on that, and once you get the August numbers, on average, you only increase or decrease about 3.3 bushel per acre for corn and 1.1 bushel per acre for soybeans from August to the final. So that report is going to be a little more important than what many of us give. Obviously, once the combines get going, that's the main thing. Getting back to your question about what do we do, I think if you haven't done anything to this point, I think you need to sit down and see what you think you have on your farm. Can you sell at these prices? If you can, I would price some. I would make sure that you have in your budget something to help you go long this board. The other thing you can do, if you're not quite where you can make profits at it, you can actually sell the board with some stops above it to get out. Sell the board, put some calls on top of it to keep your margin down. But the thing about selling the board versus the cash is that allows you to move in and out real quickly. You don't have to worry about things like they did in 2012 when it cost a dollar premium above the cost to get out of a contract in 2012.
Like you and Wayne Nelson, Rich is an alum of the University of Illinois.
Yes, he is, and we're proud to have him as one of our alums, and he's done a real good job of forecasting here along the way. And I think one of the things as we look at this we want to say is August is the month of the bean harvest. That's where we get our yield verified or taken away. And basically along the way, we're looking at a fairly dry August as we look ahead at all the European models and what we're sticking on out there. Now, not saying it's going to be not hot and dry that would kill the crop. It's going to be moderate temperatures, but we're going to have less precipitation is what we're being forecast in the 30-day forecast from NOAA and from Agribull and from two or three of the other forecasters out there now. What we're reminded of today was that looking at August last year to get the big pump up in yields, we had quite a bit of rain in August, which helped really fill the pods. We got threes instead of twos. We got big beans, and we added 3 to 4 bushels more than we thought we were going to. Will we stay dry like is forecast, and will we not have that extra pump up? We might not lose a lot, but we're not going to have the bump up like we had last year.
Last year, August was quite volatile. If you remember the crop report, the row box got on that thing. We were sharply lower, then we came back and went higher. It was really a dramatic move with the analog tradings. But also, too, we bottomed in July.
We moved higher into mid-August, and all of a sudden we did get some rain, but we moved lower into August. What happened into August? Elevator called everybody up and said, do you want to pay another in charge? So farmers puked out cash grain left and right that last 2 weeks of August. So we got to be careful in here. Make catch-up sales if we do get some strength.
Of course, August 10th, this is the day of the crop production report. How do you go about making those cash sales? I mean, you're just going to dump at this point? What are you thinking about?
Well, I think you got to have orders above the marketplace. Take advantage of the up moves. Guys are getting bullish on the up moves and getting bearish on the down moves. I think you got to continue to push it out the door. As far as new crop, there's a lot more time there to work with on it. But this old crop, if you still have some inventory, like we've been saying all along, at least I've been saying all along, it's been a toxic situation holding on to this old crop. So the commercial knows it's still out there, and it's going to be awful hard to get a premium unless you shop around.
Okay, I have an odd question for you, there's probably some fundamentals just from the idea of whether you can actually do this. It's possible, of course, to store soybeans in your home bins. We know soybeans have been, for the last 3 years, the money makers for producers. Is there any reason at all to store soybeans rather than corn this year when you're thinking about how to allocate your storage space? Anybody got some thoughts on that one? Just something I've been thinking about a little bit.
The years I worked as a grain elevator manager, it was kind of interesting. Beans always seemed to have an invisible shrink from harvest to when you finally got done and cleaned your bins out at the end of the year. So from that standpoint, you want to be careful about storing your beans at home because you really won't want to go through that invisible shrink. My ideas on it is if I have to pay storage for something, I would rather take it to the elevator, pay storage on the beans, because any story that comes around for the beans, A, 15 cents, 20 cents gets, you know, can move pretty quickly with the soybean crop. And then the second part about it, the soybeans, is that year after year after year, we keep underestimating the amount of use for the soybeans, and more gets used than what we think. And China seems to be on track again to increase usage even next year.
And when they go bad fast.
They do go bad fast, and boy, do they smell. I had to throw away 3 or 4 pairs of boots during my time in the elevator business because of that. The other thing that we have to look at here is we thought we were clear out of beans here in the Midwest, and all I'm hearing is Mile Lines hauling in beans this last week. Where would these come from? So there are some people who did source some beans, but they are coming out of there. I think another thing along the way as we look at it is, depending on what size bin you have and what it's going to take to do it, I don't see anything wrong with having a 20 or 30,000 bushel bin of beans sitting out there looking for things to come along. Because, just like anything else, we now have semis in our lot that we can haul here, there, and wherever. It's not just the little local elevator. And there's going to be people and processors and times. If you're willing to haul in crummy weather or when things are happening, you can pick up that 10 to 15 cents extra on a spot bid. So we're saying use all your home storage, take advantage of those spot bids, move it on out. If it's a bad price on the board, buy it back on the board, buy a call, do whatever, but take advantage of when the processor needs the product.
This is a change to some extent from previous decades when the bulk of the crop grown here in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, now much broader across the whole of the United States, which makes local bases change a lot more quickly and needs pop up and disappear.
Yeah, the key, and it's been talked about quite a bit, is stay flexible in your marketing plan. You got to be able to take advantage of pop-up bids in certain areas. Like Wayne said, if you're mobile like most producers and have some transportation to work with, there's some opportunities there. But the key is to stay flexible and have a plan and take advantage of those opportunities.
What do you think about 2018 crop at all? Anything?
Well, I've talked to guys still got 2016, let alone trying to sell 2018. 2018 corn, you get up around 425, 430. It's not a bad spot to maybe put it on the hedge. Same thing on the beans there. You could slightly go into it. But you need to make sure you push the pencil. Guys aren't too comfortable because the cost of production and their inputs aren't locked in yet. So as we move into this fall and winter, I think guys would be a little bit more receptive to doing something out there.
Well, yeah, too often I don't see anybody using the board like they should be. It's just easier to move in and out of the board to take care of your situation. I don't know. I kind of have to agree with what Kurt said.
Well, you know, most of all the advisory firms have got you 20 to 30% sold out in 18. They're saying, look, we can lock in product here if we do have the good production. If Brazil comes in big again and everything along the way, this is a way to reduce your risk out there. And a lot of the things are, we can, you know, we did it on the board. Sure, we can re-own it. We can put a call against it. We can sell a call above it or below it or whatever along the way. So there's a lot of things we can do, but what if we get there and it's only 375 because we do have another rain that comes through Iowa? If Iowa in this cool weather, maybe these hybrids improved that much. I don't know. You know, we were talking to some of our customers up in northern Illinois, and they had a seed corn meeting up there. And the agronomists and the district directors were all there from the three areas across from Route 80 north. And they said a third of their hybrids were not planted till after May 20th. Okay, they're generally April 20th to May 1st in that area planted, so they're a good 3 to 4, and that's because they weren't to the farmer's hands yet, so they weren't planted yet. So are we going to see a cutback because of planting dates? Remember, they're always saying a cutback after the 14th or 15th of May, and you put another 3 weeks on that. Are we going to lose the 2 to 3 to 5 bushels because of later planting for the whole northern third of Illinois?
Might be time for me to post the Emerson Nafziger planting date studies, and that corn number just sort of begins to shade off over time, and it doesn't come back. Soybeans hold for much longer time than corn does. Fundamentals, go back through these for me for corn and where we really stand. Number of acres, a number of carryout bushels, the things that are useful for producers to take a look at.
As far as carryout is where I kind of spend my time focusing on. The rest of it is kind of noise for me. I like to see where it's at, and I'd like something to be below. I'd like to see it down to 1.5, maybe 1.6 billion. Currently, it's up around 2.3, roughly. On the soybeans, we're running 4 to 4.50, you know, depending on what kind of crop we're going to have. If you can break it down to, say, 2.75, 3, you've got yourself a market going. So in that idea, in that respect, I think you can watch that. Acreage-wise, there is some talk that there's probably more abandoned acres, say, in Indiana than what people thought. This was in a tweet by a guy that was running a drone around and looking at that. So I don't know how to just pinpoint it into this figure, because there's so many variables out here. As long as things stayed confused, I think your market's going to trend higher. The more you find out about it, I have a feeling you're going to start moving lower in price.
I guess the big thing is that this is a lot different than having a 1.2 billion bushel carryout for corn and 120 million bushels for soybeans.
Yeah, and if you're a numbers nut, you can go to Batescom.net. We got a 10-year history in the supply-demand report, so you can pull those up and look at them. But you're correct. If it was a tighter carryout coming in this year, it'd be more of a market maker. But we still had that old crop hanging over the marketplace to keep a lid on it. If you take 5 bushels off the corn yield, you can take this carryout down about 1.9, and there's concern about corn demand. So if you add 25 million bushels back in there, you're a 1.93, 1.95 billion bushel. That's still ample supplies. Stocks-to-use ratio that Merle hit on there a little bit, it's not tight enough to get real bullish. Beans, there's still time on beans, but bean demand continues to be much better than what the trade believes.
Let's get a final word from each of you. We'll start with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, my old friend Elwin Taylor, he tweeted on Thursday afternoon that he still thought we were a trend line or above corn yields for the year. Now, I went to a lot of seminars and talked a lot with Elwin, and doggone it, the guy never seemed right to begin with, but at the end of the year, he generally seemed to be that way. And I used to be able to just ask him whether he'd market his corn for his mother or not, and then doggone it, she cashed her underground, and I can't get a straight answer on him.
That, of course, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Merrill Crowley is here, too. He's with Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois.
I still have a tendency to want a bullish tilt to these markets simply from what my technicals have told me. Also, you know, I'm looking at, you know, your cycles and running through that. The stock market initially was what I thought would sell off. Money would come into the markets and create the bull move. That has gone on longer than I thought. And it was interesting, I picked up today, is that in the last month in 1929, before the big break, the stock market actually ran up 10% and then died. So if we can get a move up and a blow off from that, I think you could pull your money back into the commodities without anything else happening.
Well, isn't that a cheery note? Kurt Kimball is here, too. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Giddy up. Danville Monday, Peoria Tuesday, Springfield Wednesday, and I'll be late coming to work Thursday morning.
And those are all at 7 o'clock. Dan Zwicker will be there among the rest of this crew, and parts are all of them. Again, those are in Danville and Peoria and Springfield, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, all at the Farm Bureau buildings, and they're all open and free. Come on out and see Dan on those nights. Thanks for being with us here on Commodity Week. You can always find us at willag.org. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to the whole of our program online at willag.org. Thanks to our panelists today, too, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and from Watseka, Illinois, and Crowley Commodities, Merrill Crowley. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.